Hello, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency, devoted to promoting musicians and authors worldwide. Call us today at 941-877-1552 to start your free publicity evaluation. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Please welcome the host of Interviewing the Legends, music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello, once again, everyone. I'm your host, Ray Shasho. Welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends on BBS Radio, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or email us at publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. The Burrito Brothers celebrate an illustrious past while serving up fresh contributions for a bright future. They continue to climb the branches of the many tall pines first planted in 1968, trace the winding paths of country and rock and roll back, and you'll find them there. Anyone who had a heart and ears can tell these guys are world-class musicians and songwriters with one listen. Here they are in the years carrying on the tradition of classic late 1960s and 70s, hippie country rock music expanding its boundaries, always exploring new horizons. Country rock's big bang came in Los Angeles in the late 60s. In 1968, Ian Dunlop and Barry Tashin started the Flying Burrito Brothers. Then in 1969, with Graham Parsons and Chris Hillman at the helm, the group released their classic first LP, The Gilded Palace of Sin. Since then, the band has carried on, always evolving. This year marks the 50th anniversary of that classic LP. Graham Parsons' original vision for the band is still going strong. "I just ran 20 red lights in his honor," says Chris James. At the beginning of the 1980s, the band moved their base of operations from L.A. to Nashville. At that point, the name was shortened to the Burrito Brothers. The band has remained in Nashville ever since. Now the Burrito Brothers are right on track. It's a new dawn. It's a new day. It's a new life. For we, feeling good, says Chris. The band features Chris James, who's been involved with the band since 2009, guitarist Bob Hatter, Tony Paoletta on pedal steel, and drummer Peter Young. All extremely talented musicians who love being involved with the band's legacy and creating new music to keep their legacy alive. They continue to carry the torch via the notorious Burrito Brothers release, which features the band's trademark tight ensemble playing, beautiful harmonies, and excellent songwriting. The new album features 8 original songs and the band's version of The Dark End of the Street from Gilded Palace of Sin. Will James from Graham Parsons International says the latest incarnation is the closest to the original FBB sound of all of the previous bands. Graham Parsons said it best. The ideal keeps going on. It's not like it's dead or anything. Whether I do it or anybody else does it, it's got to keep going. Please welcome frontman for the Burrito Brothers, Chris James, to Interviewing the Legends. Hello, Chris.
Hello. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it very much, Ray. It's an honor and a treat to get to do this.
Well, where are you originally born and raised?
I'm from Wichita, Kansas.
Okay.
Spent my childhood and went to Kansas State University after high school, and then after that I had moved to Nashville to pursue a career in music.
Well, when did you move to Nashville?
1980.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's where all the great musicians are, and they still are, you know?
Well, yeah, you could make a case for that, yeah. And certainly the studios, too. It seems to really have the
One of my favorite football players of all time is from Kansas, John Riggins.
Oh, yeah. I was thinking you might say Barry Sanders. He was from Wichita.
Barry Sanders, too. Yeah. Kansas is a great place. And, of course, one of my favorite progressive rock bands, Kansas, from Kansas.
Oh, yeah. Which seemed unusual to me when they came out, because they seemed so prog, almost right. Like the European groups and stuff, you know. The reputation of Kansas seems more rural. And, in fact, a lot of that sort of country rock, I guess they called it back then, the rock groups, the hippie groups that utilized country sounds and flavors in their music, like the Flying Burrito Brothers and New Riders, the Purple Sage, right. And Pure Prairie, Pogo, those yep. kind of groups were very popular there in the Midwest. Kansas seemed an anomaly, kind of. It's like, wow, so they sound like that, huh?
Yeah, I agree. But a lot of the guys did look like they were from Kansas.
Well, yeah, they looked like it, didn't they? Yeah. They just didn't really sound like
it. No, not at all. They blew me away because these guys were so good as far as musicianship, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Well, the Burrito Brothers are back. The long history of the band, of course, some great players, Graham Parsons, Chris Hillman, Michael Clark, Bernie Leadon, and I've had Rick Roberts on the show.
He's a sweet guy. I like Rick a lot.
He's a good guy. He really is. I loved him in Firefall, especially.
Great. Michael Clark was in that too.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah.
How did the concept of reincarnation of the Burrito Brothers begin? How did that all begin?
I'm not sure. It's such a strange history for a group, but more than almost any you could find. It's just this endless revolving door of people coming and new people coming in. There's an amazing fact that no two albums in a row by the Flying Burrito Brothers, who moved into being just the Burrito Brothers, no two albums in a row have the same personnel. There's always somebody who left and a new guy coming in. At first, you know, the story of Graham Parsons is pretty famous now, and he was irresponsible, I guess you could say, kind of difficult for Hillman, who was more of the band leader at the time, I believe. They finally kicked Graham out for not showing for gigs or being too loaded or whatever, even though he stands as the single most important figure in the history of the group. It was his vision more than anybody's at the start. But he's only on the first two albums.
Exactly.
Yeah. And he goes solo. Yeah. That's when Rick Roberts came in. Hillman got lured away by Stephen Stills to be in Manassas, and it just goes on and on. At one point in 1972, when Hillman was deciding to leave, they regarded it as possibly the end, which lots of groups have made so-called final albums only to come back later. The fourth Burrito Brothers album is called The Last of the Red Hot Burritos.
Right.
And lo and behold, the next year, Rick Roberts is requested to lead a version of the band overseas to do concerts, and they recorded an album, a live album. So the group is once again going, and that's really the pattern, is that there's always been a promoter or a label deal or something that asks the most viable members of the last version of the group to reconstitute it with one or two new guys and keep going. And here's an interesting fact. Graham Parsons was asked the year he died in 1973 what he thought of the Flying Burrito Brothers back then, carrying on without a single original member, without a single guy from the first album in the group. That was just 3-4 years later, and his answer was surprisingly upbeat. He said, "What you just mentioned, that the group's got to keep going, whether I do it or anybody else, got to keep And we're true to that. It's every single change has been a rollover with an invite from a label deal or a promoter. And the core of, you know, who's still standing from the previous lineup, gets somebody new. I think it's a great formula for a steady, constant reinvention. I think a lot of groups that are 50-some years old are very, sort of just going out and doing concerts. Maybe they got one original guy left, and right. They don't make new albums. They don't have that drive and fire and need for proving themselves all over again and reinvention. So I'm certain that that's what we just did, and I've seen it in the history of this group. So it's a strange animal.
And, you know, it's strange. The band sounds so fresh. It sounds like you guys came out of nowhere and are very, very new. You know, I love it. You guys are great musicians. You really are.
I agree with that. I think these three guys I'm working with are virtuosos. They're just sensational players. And they do sessions all the time. They demand seasoned pros.
What is it? Is it true that you asked Chris Hillman to be in the band and maybe take the lead?
You know, it's funny, before I answered it, I thought I might address, you said it seems like the band came out of nowhere, and I think a lot of the public kind of has that impression, because, as I put it, the group really kind of fell under the radar, but if you look at the timeline on our website, it never didn't exist.
Right.
And there were always albums, they just weren't as big as this one. This is the biggest record deal the group's had in decades.
Yeah.
It's a worldwide distribution. A label in England called FFM. And they're promoting us and arranging things like you and I are doing right now. And it's a higher level than I've witnessed in the group. It isn't out of nowhere, but it kind of seems like it.
Yeah. Yeah,
but back to Hillman.
Yep.
When I came into the group in 2009, I had just like everybody who's new to the group, really, I had been around. I had substituted for Carlton Moody on a few occasions in that Burrito Deluxe lineup, and had played a guest vocal on an album, and I was on. First album I was on was in 1987. It was called Wheels, and it was a Graham Parsons tribute that was recorded. Argyle Bell, a friend of mine here in Nashville, organized a tribute for the essentially unknown Graham Parsons still at that time. And the Burrito Brothers, who were just two guys with a national record deal, Gib Bilbeau and John Beelan, used the backup band at that night. Argyle organized a backup group for all the individual singers and stuff. And they ended up recording it, and it came out as an album called Wheels. And so I had, in that, I had my first entry of being on an album with the Flying Burrito, with the Burrito. Those weren't flying, those were the Burrito. They dropped the name Flying in 1980.
Right.
It kind of popped up here and there over the years, but it's essentially dropped in 1980. So, by 2009, my turn came, and strangely enough, the group was in sort of there was no clear-cut leader. Carlton Moody had been a previous leader, and the reason for the reconstitution this time was that he had had enough and bowed out. He was over in Paris, France, and it was getting complicated or whatever. I can't speak for him, but he reached the end for his run, and a label in England, STV Records, that Bill Taylor talked to me about realizing that I had been around the guys and knew them, asked if I might be able to organize the next version of the Burrito Brothers. He wanted them on his label, and he knew that the other group had just hit a wall or whatever it was. And so the idea there and then surviving member of the classic Gilda Palace of Sin lineup.
Right.
And we were even going so far as to see if we could talk to, well, we did talk to Rick Roberts, mm-hmm. Bernie Ledden, Al Perkins, because
yep.
he was deceased.
Yep.
Michael Clark was deceased, so the closest we could get to the pedigree that goes all the way back was Gene Parsons mm-hmm. on gun. And this idea of getting the most veteran, still alive version of the Burrito Brothers possible, and it was an almost, because all of them said that they would do it if Hillman did.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly, for obvious reasons, Hillman would be the leader. He was the co-creator in the first place.
Right.
And he responded that he was happy with his career the way it was. It was easier. He made good enough money. I think he was mostly doing just duets with Herb Peterson and
right.
easy, no overhead kind of touring. And the way he put it, he said, if I wanted to go back and rekindle past glories, it would be the Birds with David Crosby and Roger McGuinn. He said that they get offered crazy money to do that, and they don't, because they don't really need to, and they're all comfortable. And he said that the Flying Burrito Brothers never really were any sort of big cash-in gold mine, kind of had memories, you know, the whole thing was dealing with Graham and such, but it was kind of a headache. So he said no, he declined, and upon doing that, the others who all said they'd do it if he did it also declined.
Right.
But Del Taylor for FTB Records was not deterred. He came back saying, that's okay, there's been new lineups and reinventions of the Burritos all through the years. So he kind of set up a formula. He said that he wanted me to tell him, each of the people I was going to talk to different people about being in the group and who seemed appropriate. They needed to have some sort of history in their family tree, so to speak.
Sure.
And he wanted to recognize, he wanted to okay each entry, which is kind of different, the shopping list. He also required that I obtain trademark or U.S. trademark rights to the name.
Okay.
I'd never done that before, but it was available, it was open.
How about
that? And we were the guys, you know, we could show usage. And then, of course, you know, if the album wasn't good, he could still decline it, but
right.
We met all three of those points, and at that time it was, at first, it was Walter Egan, who had already, he's carryover from before, and Rick Lano, who was the carryover before, and then I was the new member who had been around and guested before, but this was the first time I was actually, you know, in the band picture, a true full member. And we got Soup Granda, who had been, he was from the Ozark Mountain Daredevil.
Oh, yeah, sure. Great band.
Yeah, and he agreed to do it, and then Ozark got back together. and he bailed out on. And then we got Michael Curtis, and something happened. I think it was him deciding that he didn't think he could dedicate enough time to it because of his daughter, who was just the age that he wanted to focus on. And so we kind of kept, it was Rick and Walter and I were kind of thinking, well, we're still stymied to find the fourth guy. And ended up getting my brother Fred, who had been the contact in the first place,
mm-hmm.
For the label. He,
right.
He's a known producer of
yep.
blues records. And that's the label had reached me through Fred saying that his brother Chris knew these people, you ought to talk to him.
I just want to mention one thing to the audience. Your brother has had 5 Grammy Award nominations.
He's established a serious talent. It's all in the blues field. It's
yep.
kind of a little different from us, which proved to be his reason for exiting, that it just kind of wasn't totally his deal. But it worked for us because after a couple guys being in and right back out, we were kind of eager to get something going. And it was Walter who suggested, since that label head already knows Fred, he'd probably okay him.
Sure.
And so that happened.
You know, the way it is right now, you know, every album you can bring in guest artists, you know, because they would love to do it because of the name, you know?
Well, we did on this one. Yeah. Ronnie Gilbo sings lead on Do Right Man.
Right.
He's a co-writer on it. It's nice. He's a great singer and a great talent. In fact, I asked him to join back then at the very beginning. I always thought he was perfect for this group. But he had some sort of healthcare. I don't think calling him a nurse is exactly right, but he's in some sort of job that has lots of like stability and benefits, and so he doesn't go tour. He doesn't really want to be in a band like that, but he does lots of sessions and performs locally. And I've always thought his talent was ideal for this group, so I approached him when I was first looking for people.
Well, the latest album, the Notorious Burrito Brothers, is excellent. I gave it 5 stars. I love bands like, I like the Eagles, and I've had Don Felder on the show recently. But I like more the rock type, you know, Eagles.
Yeah.
When they get too twangy, that's when I lose a little interest. But this is great. I mean, yeah, I love bands like Pure Prairie League and Firefall and Poco. You know, those are different, you know?
I regard, especially now, the Burrito Brothers as a rock group. We're a rock group that incorporates some of the flavorings that touches the aesthetic of known in country music. But it's really nothing like the...
not at all.
The current country scene, it's a rock group. It's more inventive and progressive, and the lyrics are desire to be more poetic and not surface-level, multi-dimensional. And I think it's... I don't really like the term country rock.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, it doesn't make people think of something like us anymore.
Right.
It makes them think more like Southern Rock or Boogie In or something.
Right.
And it's not really the right term for us. I think we're just a rock band.
Well, the band, like, for instance, Bring It, which is one of my favorite tunes on the album.
Yeah.
That thing, if this was in the 70s, that could have been easily a top 40 hit. There's
I think so. Yeah. That was part of the thought. We really did conceive this album. We didn't just wind up with 9 songs and say, okay, that's enough, let's call it an album. We had a whole idea, a concept for mapping it out. And Bring It is the introduction. It asks everybody to come on in and join the party. And, and it's really, initially when we first started writing the idea, it was thinking it would be... live show opener, which I'm sure it still will be when we ever get around to that.
I know.
But it's this show opener, and so it's higher energy, and of course I asked Bob when we first talked about the idea to come up with a killer guitar riff to it, and he did.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of Tom Petty-ish in a way, the riff.
yeah, I think so. And there's another one that people even more so keep citing that they think reminds them of Tom Petty, and that's the song written with Skip Spence,
Moby Great
Desire.
Yeah, the Moby Great guy.
Yeah,
another great band.
Oh, I love them. Yeah.
But, you got Sometimes You Just Can't Win. Talk about that too.
Yeah, that's of interest because it's a lyric that is partly Graham Parsons. It comes from the Graham Parsons notebook.
Right.
There was an album in the year 2000 that I was involved with making here in Nashville called the Graham Parsons Notebook. And what it is John Nuys, Graham's friend from back from, he was in the International Submarine Band. He had a notebook of Graham's that had a bunch of lyrics and song ideas and phrases and things in it, and a guy named Mike Ward here in Nashville got a record deal for the idea of getting famous and somewhat famous like me, guys to build an album from it, you know, writers and singers and
right.
great musicians, and then, I got one song on there, and then, had these other ideas. I had photocopies of these lyrics from Grant,
mm-hmm.
And so we think now it's ideal to include a quote unquote new Graham Parsons song.
Yeah.
We found out that, that actually was a little more a lyric of Fred Neil's, the famous folk singer who did Everybody's Talking and the Dolphins and stuff. And Graham had apparently just written it in his book from memory. Nowhere did he write Fred Neil's name, and nowhere did he write a song title. He just wrote some words down. And when I went to compare, I realized that he took liberties and came up with some sentences of his own. And so we decided to credit it to Graham Parsons and Fred Neil on the lyrics, and then the group, as we came up with the music, and the idea there was to emulate the classic era of the Rolling Stones, because Graham Parsons was so famously influenced by and influenced the Rolling Stones and friends of Keith Richards. And so instead of taking this Graham lyric and treating it with some sort of old school country, we decided to rock it out.
Yeah, I love how you guys did that, you know. Same thing with Wheels of Fire. I mean, all the people you mentioned in that song is incredible. I don't know.
Yeah.
It must have taken you a long time to put that one together.
Yeah, although it's funny how they sort of just start falling in, you know. We're just so into the process and loving every moment of it that everybody in this band is on the same page and has mutual love and respect for each other, so it just goes pretty nicely. That is definitely the finale.
Incredible.
It has references of
everybody.
Each of the songs that came before it, and then it's been all these inside references to things that happened in the history of rock.
It's fantastic.
Thank you. That's what I was hoping.
Yeah. I got to tell the audience, the song's title is a classic LP by Cream. There's reference in there from the Byrds. There's a comment that came from Johnny Depp, couldn't give a rat's ass.
Yeah.
There's some Beatles references, Mother Mary. One of my favorite albums of all time, Wings of Fire from the Mahavishnu Orchestra. You mentioned that.
Oh, yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah, it's the flight variation. I mean, the album is called Birds of Fire, right? But
Birds of Fire. That's right.
Wings of Fire. I was certainly thinking that.
Yeah, I just had Jan Hammer on the show too, so I should.
Oh,
know
wonderful!
That.
Yeah.
Yeah. But what a to incorporate all these, you know, lyrics in there and sayings and, you know, like you said, pieces of history from rock and roll. It's and for it to, you know, come up with a song out of it. That's amazing.
Yeah, it was fun. It seemed like everything flowed. I really believe it's the best album I've ever been a part of,
uh-huh.
and it's the strongest album by the Brito Brothers in my tenure, and probably for a ways back, because like we said, the group kind of fell under the radar some years there, and I don't think there was the same level of input. We really finally arrived at a chemistry and a camaraderie that is just sweet as it could be. We are brothers.
Yeah. Well, you guys are going to take it to another level, I got a feeling, and I just hope you guys stick together so we won't have another incarnation.
Yeah, you know, I was hoping that too. I'm thinking that it's possible that this may be the first time in the entire 51-year history that the two albums in a row are made by the same lineup.
How about that?
I sure hope so, because this one is just is really splendid in my book.
What's Dynamite?
Feels so right. And we already are working on new ideas.
Awesome.
I mean, we don't just stop and wait and see what's going on with this. We just keep doing what we do. The album was done back in November, early November, and our friend and representative in England, Bob Boiling, got us the deal before we even had finished recording it, because the label that he spoke to, Diane Adams at SFM in England, really liked our last album that we self-produced, which I now realize was a mistake. We thought we could market it ourselves, sell it online, and sell it at our gigs and stuff. And when it didn't do much, we tried to pitch it. And unfortunately, since it was already available on downloads and listed on Amazon that way, and had a you know, the code, the UPC code, and all that, even we gave it a label name, even though, you know, anybody could do that, and it's self-produced album. But this label said, sorry, that still counts as being released. You just let us know when you got your next thing, because, you know, we like. So that worked like a charm.
Yeah.
So we finished the album in November and had a deal. Bingo, just like that.
That's amazing.
And release date was a few weeks ago, something like that.
Yeah.
So that's almost 5 months. We, sometime around the first of the year or end of last year, we started already talking about getting together, writing new material, coming up with ideas. And even though we're stalled from getting together personally, we're able to communicate,
sure.
You know? We exchange MP3 sketches.
Exactly.
We talk about it. We email each other. We phone call, you know? So we're actually... In fact, I just sent Tony Perrella a new song idea that I came up with called Together.
Mm-hmm.
And the next day, this was just 2 days ago, the next day he already sent it back to me with a wonderful steel part all over it. And
cool.
And Pete put some drums. I think we'll be raring to go when this horrible pandemic ends, and hopefully we'll be doing some good concerts. The desire is to go overseas.
Well, that's it. You know, you may hit it huge, you know, and say Japan or in Amsterdam, and you never know.
Well, that is the goal. That's the hope. We don't know, but I think that it's more likely for something like that than to think we're going to somehow overtake the popularity contests of the United States. You know, it's a different scene nowadays. It doesn't feel real conducive to an older group like us and who we are. It's an odd sort of American Idol pop scene here. I think overseas we stand some chances of being respected and regarded higher. I liken it somewhat, at least my hope, you know, how they say envision what you hope to happen, is like the jazz guys, especially the black guys of the 50s and 60s, guys like Dexter Gordon, who went over to Europe.
That's right.
And found success and respect.
Mm-hmm.
And back here in the U.S., it was prejudice and ignoring them, you know. And I think that we have enough of a pedigree and are talented enough to be seen as a voice of something worth checking out. You know, I think that a lot of Europeans really love this kind of music and don't quite know how to execute it.
Mm-hmm. Well, like you said, they love that kind of music.
Yeah.
You know, that they you were mentioning the R&B bands. A lot of those bands, too, went to Toronto, you know.
Yeah, that's a possibility, too. I've done a couple interviews with Canada, and they have a different sort of vibe.
They do.
Yeah.
I want to mention a couple of more songs on the album, because they're all worth mentioning.
Thank you.
Love is a River, which is cool because it switches direction and kind of has a psychedelic feel at the end.
I like that. That's certainly in our wheelhouse. I mean, I really like the idea of psychedelic touches being part of the equation with this group.
The song
like
totally.
I think of it as a progressive rock group. Yeah. I think maybe that doesn't immediately hit everybody because they sort of hear the country flavor.
Right.
But it's Love is a River. It's very much.
Yeah.
In that sort of mindset, because it's an 11-minute suite that travels all over the place. So it's essentially built from two full songs and then two little fragments, two song ideas, all melded into one suite, which is very much in keeping with the album being a flow, a concept, God, I keep wanting to say progressive. That's a dangerous word.
But, you know, the song kind of, it did fool me, you know, because it did switch direction. And more I kept listening to it, I get, wow, man, this thing's really building up.
And then it finally comes back to finish the whole cycle with the original melodic theme returning.
Exactly.
It's sweet, too. It kind of makes me think of something like the way Ringo is always flashing the peace sign, or the way the Beatles sing "All You Need Is Love." You know, love is a river; it runs through everybody. It's a love that conquers all. It's very special.
Very clever song. It really is.
Thank you.
I wanted to mention "Dark End of the Street." Something about Tony wanted to record the song. He felt the Burrito version got too many things wrong.
Well, that's actually true. It might be blasphemy to some of the diehard Van Parsons fans, and don't get me wrong, I think their version is pretty. I think it's very nice, mostly on the grounds of how talented those guys were and how wonderful a Graham Parsons singing voice. I just love his singing.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, though, he clearly, kind of like that lyric I was talking about in his notebook, he would just do these things from memory. I think one of Graham's, if not his biggest contribution to his peers and the world of rock in his day, was that he was so darn familiar with a whole bunch of traditional country songs and R&B. And that song is not written by the Burrito Brothers. It's a R&B standard. It was by James Carr. It was also recorded by Aretha Franklin.
Mm-hmm.
And Percy Sledge did it. The list goes on and on.
Yep.
And Tony had, just a night or two before we talked, seen Dan Penn, who's one of the writers of that song with Chips Moman. Dan Penn sang it, and Tony was taken by the fact that the form is really different from what we got familiar with on the Gilded Palace of Sin. There's more of a storyline that Graham didn't sing all of. He left out some parts, and some of the form is kind of different, and Tony was saying that he thought it'd be nice for us to do it in more of the true way it was written.
Right.
And at first I was against the idea because I still thought it came a little too close to just us copying something that the classic group did. We're not into it. I mean, we'll do that in a live performance as a proper salute to where we, you know, if you're going to be the Burrito Brothers, you got to do some of those songs. You just want to play live.
Of course.
But putting it on an album, I don't know about that. And he really wanted to and convinced us, and I thought, well, Tony's such a special person. He brings so much to this group that I don't want to go against his wishes. I don't want to be that kind of tough guy or something. And so we did it. And man, I've grown to love it. I'm absolutely satisfied that it is absolutely not a copy of the version.
I agree. Great, great, great track. And I want to, is it acrostic? Is that how you pronounce that?
Yeah, acrostic is a poetic or a lyrical tool in which the first letter of each line spells out a message. So if you're looking at the lyric sheet, you read down the left-hand side, I looked it up to find what I just told you, and I don't know if I've ever heard a song that's an acrostic. I think I want to write one. And my mother had just recently, like a month before or so, passed away. And that made me, when I went to the piano and sort of settled in, that came over me. I thought about our mother giving words of advice and kindness to her child.
Yeah.
And I ended up having to include the father as well. Mm-hmm. And it's the most laid back, sort of almost jazzy, subdued thing.
Mm-hmm.
Tony told me he liked it a lot and said it reminded him a little bit of Chet Baker, which I took as a compliment.
Right. Beautiful lyrics, man. Time is a healer or is it a stealer?
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, it's funny.
It's great.
Another train is going to come. We got a video of that. It's on our website. It's, uh-huh. I hope we do a little more of that. Even though we can't get together, the guy who did the album artwork.
Right.
And who also did all the layout and design when I was involved with the magazine in Nashville called Shake.
Mm-hmm.
His name is Warren Ells. And he surprised me one day. He just sent it to me. It blew me away. He sent a conceptual video of, I guess you call it found footage or file footage, stuff he had access to, and made a video of acrostic. So it's not us performing or on camera, but it's still, I think it works.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
The website is theburritobrothers.net,
yep.
And it's there. Also, another thing that's there is our performance last November,
mm-hmm.
of the entire Gilded Palace of Sin from start to finish. We were asked to do that by Will James, who puts on a Graham Parsons tribute every year in Nashville, well, in a bunch of places.
Right.
He calls it Grand National. And, it was kind of ironic that we had just finished this album that's so special to us, so, you know, it's sort of the best album we've done in years, and yet there we are playing the 50-year-old songs, but I don't really have a problem with that on the grounds that it was an honor and flattering to be asked to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And we treated it in a different sort of way where we kept having alumni, previous members of the Burrito Brothers,
yeah.
come up and join us for various different songs. And we even did, Will kept boasting and saying that he was sure nobody'd ever done it. We did that final Hippie Boy,
mm-hmm.
that recitation that is on the very end of the album that is in some sort of turned on 1969 variation of that Hank Williams Luke the Drifter type character.
Right.
That took some memorizing. I wasn't about to go out there knowing it was filmed, and or just even knowing that it was being attended and looked at. I wasn't going to read those words on a sheet of paper. I spent a lot of time learning that.
Well, the band is terrific. I mean, everything you did, you know, your tributes within the lyrics, all the songs are original except one cover tune, I believe.
Yeah.
And that's the way it should be. You know, this is the next generation, you know. You want to have some fresh ideas and, you know, you want to come out with your own thing. You're not a cover band, you know.
Oh, no, absolutely. No,
oh, no.
Cover bands don't continue to make new albums
exactly.
on a regular basis.
Yeah.
We've got our own creativity that adds to the story. I feel like we're peaking. It feels really good.
You just got to get out on the road now, man.
Yeah. Although we're really, our priority is making great albums.
Right.
At least we'd like to believe they are. You know, there have been plenty of examples in music history of groups who were, first and foremost, an album-making entity.
True.
Steely Dan certainly comes to mind.
Oh, yeah.
You know, maybe Alan Parsons Project, I don't know. But I wouldn't wouldn't say we're quite only that. Absolutely not. I mean, I just mentioned how we played last November, and we were always interested and up for playing good shows. But on the other side of that coin, we're not like heavily desiring just hitting the road and staying out there.
Right, right. Yeah, it's tough nowadays. The road's not the same anymore, you know? Especially.
Well, and we all are pretty okay in our careers. We always find the time and right. energy and heart and desire to give our creativity to the Beatles, but it's not like the only thing these guys do. They're, like I said, they're essentially full-time session guys.
Yeah.
They're so good on their instruments. They really are virtuosos. Tony Paoletta, Bob Hatter, and Peter Young.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned Steely Dan. That's exactly right. I mean, they didn't hit the road for a long time, and actually, they didn't know who would be on the road.
I better shut up right now, because my first thought was, that might almost be true of us. But
yeah.
Right now, it's not. But you look at the history of the Burrito Brothers, and boy, is it ever changing.
Yeah.
It's not a bad thing, though, really. It's
not.
The only group I know of that seems to be the dynamic.
Yeah.
I mean, there's groups. I don't think we really compare to the groups who have one old guy who has been there all along and they still tour.
Yeah.
We're not exactly that. We're this reinvented.
You're reinvented.
Yeah.
What one band I can never understand, and here's where I get critical. I'm pretty much a purist, you know. I go way back with music, and you know, I take music very, very seriously. The Little River Band. I don't understand how they're still very, very, very popular without one original guy in the band, and they're still playing the hits, you know, and that's what's getting them by. But none of these guys.
I get it because it has some parallel to what we were doing. There was a point in time where each of the original guys, one at a time, I think. I mean, I'm not totally aware of their story, but I have some memory of reading an article about that. Where they get sort of like the Flying Grater Brothers did, where guys left, and so of course you get the new guy because the band isn't folding up shop.
Right.
And then finally, whoever the main lead singer guy was decided he'd had enough, and he was or went solo, I think. And the band had all sorts of apparatus still going. They had a record deal, they had an agent booking them, and so they just folded over into the guys who were still standing. But the strange part happens when some of those original guys 10, 15 years later decide they object, they want back in, it's really their band.
Right.
And that's where it gets sticky because, you know, for something like well over a decade, they weren't in it. And the group was still carrying on as far as I know. I think they even made new albums. So that's a strange. That would be like Chris Hillman and Bernie Ledden wanting to be in the Burrito Brothers and us saying, no, you can't.
Yeah.
It would be a little odd, wouldn't it?
Well, you know, the Little River Band, though, they were from Australia, the original guys.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it just doesn't, I don't know, it just doesn't mesh well with me because they're still selling out audiences. I have seen them a couple of times without the original band. They just happened to be, they played with Kansas, they played with a lot of the Firefall recently.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, they're not, I don't know, their original music doesn't stand out like yours does. You know what I mean? I listen to you guys and I'm not thinking about the past. But these guys are still playing the hits. Little River Band did have a lot of hits, you know?
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, I think we're kind of unique.
You guys are unique. Yeah.
The fact that we're a part of a group that just keeps getting reinvented. I'd like to think that I've been a slightly stabilizing factor to it, where we might be able to hold court here for a while. I don't ever want to regard myself as all important. I think that, like a friend of mine, music biz lawyer named Randy Harris said to me a couple of years back, he said, "Look, Chris, there'll be a burrito brothers long after you are dead and gone." And I remember seeing a quote from Sneaky Pete where he said, "There were about in 1979, I think it was, where they already kind of regarded it as having gone through a whirlwind of personnel changes." And and his response was, he believes there just will always be Burrito Brothers.
Right.
But it's not without precedent. There's scripts like Sons of the Pioneers or the Preservation Hall Jazz Band. There's some examples of a format that just carries on. And I'd like to think when my time is up that there's a younger guy who can take the helm and keep the ball rolling in much the same way that Graham Parsons said, "Idea's got to keep going, whether I do it or anybody else."
Yeah, but you know what? You can change all that. All you got to do is come up with a big hit.
They'll only
remember you guys.
The one that could have been, the one that got away was the Jagger Richards song, Wild Horses.
Right.
Because the Burrito Brothers did it first. Flying Burrito Brothers recorded and released Wild Horses on the second album. And the agreement that I think mostly Mick Jagger, the businessman, made was that we'll let you have it if you don't put it out as a single. And I think if they had been allowed to put it out as a single, it probably would have been a hit, and that would stand as the only one in the entire history,
I believe you're right.
Yeah.
Well, that means you got to come out with something better now.
Well, how about everybody start playing Bring It?
There you go. I love that
kind
song.
Of song.
That's
that
a great song.
Certainly has all the elements, if only the times weren't so bizarre, and the closed-mindedness of kind of the powers that be, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know, it's the right length, it's the right catchiness, it's the right... who knows?
You never know.
Stranger things may have happened.
Well, I'm gonna promote. I'm gonna promote the hell out of it. How's that?
Cool.
And the album.
It seems the most likely candidate. I remember, it's a known sort of formula to put the star song at the very first of an album. Yep. I remember Todd Rundgren talking about that.
Yep.
Well,
or if you get somebody else to record it for you, and just...
Yeah, and then they'll want to hear the original,
There you go. That'll work, too.
That's a thought.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's probably not too far outside the wheelhouse of some of the country acts of today.
Yep. I don't think... I don't think so. Not at all.
Now, they wouldn't be doing Wheels of Fire or Acrostic or Love is a River, but they might do Bring It.
Yeah. I think so. Why not?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know too many guys in the country business. I do know the Oak Ridge Boys.
Well, that's kind of outside the realm we're seeking right now, isn't it? I mean, they're a little bit on the downside of their career.
Yeah.
And I don't really mean that as a... I don't mean that as a put down. I just mean that as...
Well, they're getting older. I know Joe. Joe Bonsall, he's a good guy.
I've
been on the show a few times. He's a good guy.
And one of the sons, Golden, was briefly in... He's in the history, in the wild, convoluted... How many names can you possibly find who played with the Flying or Burrito Brothers? There was a brief window where he was around.
That's right.
I think it was in the early 90s, somewhere in there.
Hmm. I did a conference call once with Linda Ronstadt, Emmylou Harris, and Dolly Parton.
Oh, wow. The trio. Yeah.
Oh, they were a hoot. You should have heard them on the phone, laughing and carrying on.
Oh, wonderful. Have you seen that fantastic documentary of Linda, the Stewart and the Sound of My Voice?
I haven't seen that yet, no. Was it good?
Oh, it's beyond good. It's stellar. I would have said that I always liked Linda Ronstadt. Mm-hmm. I didn't follow her just religiously, so to speak. I had a few of her albums and always thought she was just a wonderful singer. I think the Jimmy Webb tune of her megastardom and creative juices. You know, she had that whole ability to record the Mexican, the Hispanic albums, the standards, the rock years, the country years, even classical type stuff. She had time on Broadway.
She did everything.
She got awards for it. Yeah. Her career is so impressive.
Yeah.
It's just mind-blowing.
Yeah, I was fortunate. I saw her a long time ago in the early 70s with the Eagles, and then I saw her do the Mexican thing. You know,
the
Mexican
and
show.
She's ace at all of it. That's one of the most beautiful voices you could ever hear.
Yeah, wonderful voice, fantastic.
Yeah.
She could sing anything.
Yes. Yeah.
And she wasn't bad looking either.
No, you got that right too. Yeah. I think she was clearly the most versatile one of those three. I mean, they're all just impressive talents.
Yeah.
Actually, she's possibly the most versatile singer.
Oh yeah!
I can after seeing that, I'm thinking of anybody I've ever heard of. I mean, this level of versatility is off the charts.
She's
amazing.
I agree.
It's so sad that
I know
that she can't do it. That she's what is it, Parkinson's disease?
Yeah, yeah. She still had a lot of years left in her too. You know?
Yeah, it's probably so. Although she got a lot done.
Yeah, she did.
Yeah.
Here's a band from the past. How about Freddie and the Screamers?
Oh, yeah, that's my brother.
You were in the band too, weren't you?
Well, I was never in the band, although I remember being asked to play keyboards on a couple things. I think a few dates, a couple performances in Nashville. Because I don't think, if I remember correctly, I don't think Freddie and the Screamers had a keyboard player.
Well, you got credited. I saw your name in there.
Yeah, I'm on the album. Yeah.
It sounds like a British rock band, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, you know, there was Freddie and the Dreamers.
That's right.
That was in the Mersey Beach. The British Invasion.
British Invasion, yeah.
Yeah.
Freddie and the Screamers. Here's a question, Chris, I ask everybody, and I get some interesting answers. If you had a Field of Dreams wish like the movie, to perform or collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would that be? And they could be passed on. That's fine.
Oh, my. Wow, I can't just immediately think of who that would be. You know, I want to say a Beatle. They seem to loom the highest. Although, I don't know. I should probably gear it toward who would offset what I do and not be somebody who would completely take charge. Let's see. I wonder if it would be at all possible to collaborate with Jimi Hendrix.
There you go.
That's a wild thought. It
yeah.
Something different for him. He, what an absolutely brilliant musician he was.
Just imagine what he'd be doing now if he was still around, huh?
Well, he certainly would be doing it. I can't hardly imagine, except for the fact that when you're that great a musician, when you're that capable on an instrument, it's not likely to stop anywhere. You know, like sometimes singers, you never know for sure if their career would have carried on or if they would have sort of fallen into kind of sounding the same. You just never know, you know. Like, for instance, I've kind of wondered if Janis Joplin had lived, would she have sustained a long career, or would it sort of almost works better just to be what we know of her.
Yep.
But I can't be sure, I don't know. But I do think that when you can play guitar like Jimi Hendrix, there's going to be people that, you know, he would have branched into doing the album that was rumored with Miles Davis, playing with, who knows, you know, an album with David Gilmour, whatever, something. He would have been playing. He would have been doing stuff.
Maybe a little fusion, like John McLaughlin, you know? He might
He might have gone there for a while. If he made an album with Miles Davis, he would have just opened the door to more of that, you know, to play with a couple of those kind of groups. although I know he
you never know.
was so tuned in that he got it. I remember reading that he was very impressed with Clarence White.
Mm-hmm.
I just think he's about it the best musician I've ever heard. I think of Hendrix playing like nothing is hindering the heart to the fingers.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever the flow of the music is, he's able to just have it come rolling right out. And that's not really true for most musicians.
No.
There's some limitation of, staying within the note choices and the things you're familiar with doing and all that. It seems to me like Hendrix comes as close as anybody I've ever heard to just executing everything that flows through.
Yeah, he was just getting started, too.
Yeah, how weird. Only 47 years old.
Yeah, it's amazing.
He looks a lot older, too, pictures, you know. He lived. I always thought that about George Harrison, you know. You think that that guy on the cover of Abbey Road, the final Beatles,
mm-hmm.
you know, he's only 27 years old.
And
this is when he's already done everything we've ever heard.
Yeah, it's true. And he died young. You know?
And he looks a lot older than that. I think he is. I think, you know, life experiences, he saw more than any 27-year-old.
Oh, definitely.
You know.
Definitely. Chris, anything else you'd like to promote or chat about? What's next? So you're working on some more music right now.
I even sort of have a tentative title. I'm not sure if we'll stick with it. But we decided to toss out the idea of another suite.
All right, good.
It just felt like it works as a part of. Now it's not at all sound wise or music wise a copy. It just to do another suite, and I came up with a piece of music that would be the main theme called History, because I was thinking how multifaceted that term could be as the hook, as the lyric, as the title, because people who have lived together a long time, married couples, people who love each other, family members, they have history. And then, obviously, this band is loaded with history.
Exactly.
And there's ways to look at that word and that concept that are very poetic and cool. And so I'm thinking we'll have a suite called History, which the more I liked that and the more I thought of it, might make a good album title too, really.
Good. I like it.
Yeah, so maybe a year from now. So I hesitate to talk much about that because right now is the time for the Notorious Bird Burrito. In fact, did we not talk about that? But the title is an homage, is a salute to the fact that the bird spits out this called the Notorious Bird Burrito.
Right.
And so, since that was right around the time of the beginning of the Flying Burrito Brothers and has been reported to be a variation on that name, in fact, it salutes the foundation that we carry on, the mentors, the guys who started it all.
Yeah.
It's very much in respect to them and to those who are aware of the history of the birds, they should recognize the comparison. And so I thought for some time now that at some point there ought to be a Burritos album called The Notorious Burrito Brothers.
Sure. Great title. I've had Roger McGuinn, I've interviewed Roger. He's a good guy. He lives in Orlando.
Yeah, I've met him.
Yeah. Nice guy.
Bob's guitar is signed by him. He bought 12 string. We saw Roger McGuinn play a show, and Bob brought his guitar and asked him to sign it, and he did. It was sweet.
He does a lot of, like, seamen type songs now.
Yeah, those sea shanties. The folk den stuff. Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
At one time, David Crosby was thinking about putting the birds together, and I told Roger about it. He says, "Let him do it. I'm not in." if he wants to do it, let him do it.
I was thinking that the only way the birds are together has to be the three surviving original members. It has to be Roger McGuinn, Chris Hammond, and David Crosby. But that window is looking like it's getting pretty thin right now.
it's unlikely. Roger's happy he's doing what he's doing.
Yeah. I'm not sure. You know, as much as it sounds so good on paper and you love those guys and you adore their history and have every album, I'm not sure that it exactly works as well as people would like to think.
They've been down
many roads and they're pretty old now.
Yeah.
It just might not flow so great.
I don't think so.
An example is that all the way back in 1972, that Asylum record where the original Firebirds got together didn't turn out quite as spectacularly as everybody sort of thought it might. David Geffen touted it so highly, and it's pretty much now seen as not quite even as good as the Birds that Roger McGuinn had going, that he folded in order for the original guys to get back together. Clarence White, Gene Parsons, Skip Batten, McGuinn Birds, they were great.
Yeah. Well, just like you guys, you know, the Burrito Brothers, you got a new chapter, and it's all fresh, all new, and you guys are going to go far. You just got to get on the road a little bit.
I hope so. I suppose it'll be a while.
But I think things are looking up, you know?
This is the biggest upswing I've seen, I can't complain. If we don't have some grand success from this, it won't be for not trying.
Exactly. It's a great album. I love it. Like I said, 5 stars. Everybody needs to buy it, and I'm going to promote the hell out of it.
Thank you.
It'll be on YouTube, iTunes, iHeartRadio. We're everywhere, so you won't have to worry about any exposure.
Excellent. And I want to invite people to check out our website, burritobrothers.net.
We'll put the links.
And read the timeline, read the blog that tells what's happening in each of the song lyrics. It's good stuff.
Yeah, I like how you did that, by the way. That's great.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's a great website, by the way. Really good website.
Cool.
You know, there's a lot of bands that forget about their websites, and then they're old and they don't update. I hate when they do that.
That's what we actually, I admit just having done that until recently. You know, everything's on a new level right now.
That's great.
It's back into gear a lot better. I think we let ours get a little old there two, 3 years back.
It's all fresh now.
Yeah. Well, it's strange to think that I've now been in it a long time. One guy, an interviewer I talked to a couple days ago, said it looked like my tenure in the group, if you go on Wikipedia, it lists all the members of 60 people or something.
Yep.
And it has a bar graph kind of timeline thing that shows the years each of them were in. And I was kind of surprised and I guess gratified to notice that there's only 3 names in there who've been in this group more years than I. And when I mentioned that to this guy, he said, yeah, but not only that, I don't think any of them have been in an 11-year period straight through.
That's right.
They're guys who were in for some years and out and back in. And
you're going to be the longest-lasting member.
Yeah, it's starting to look that way. Where did that time go? I thought I was kind of new.
Pretty cool, huh? It's funny how things work out.
Yeah, time flies.
Yeah. Chris, thank you so much, man, for being on the show today. I really appreciate it. When things clear, come to Florida, man. Everybody here will love you, love the band.
Oh, thank you, Ray. I look forward to that. I hope so, and I sure do appreciate you having me.
Anytime, man. You're welcome anytime on the show to promote anything you want.
Excellent. Fantastic.
All right, man.
All right. It's been a real pleasure.
Me too. Stay healthy.
You too. Stay safe. Yep.
All right. Take care. Right. Bye-bye.
Yep. Goodbye.
Purchase the Burrito Brothers' latest album entitled The Notorious Burrito Brothers at Amazon.com. I gave it 5 stars. You'll love the album. For more information about Chris James and the Burrito Brothers, visit the Burrito Brothers' website at www.theburritobrothers.net. Also, they are on Facebook at www.facebook.com/CosmicNashville. And let's see. You can also visit the Burrito Brothers at www.theburritobrothers.net/media. Very special thanks to John Lappin Enterprises for arranging this interview with Chris James and the dynamic duo of Doug and Don Newsome of BBS Radio for making the magic happen for each and every broadcast of Interviewing the Legends. If you have comments or suggestions for the show, contact me at interviewingthelegends@gmail.com. Please subscribe to my YouTube channel, Interviewing the Legends with Ray Shasho, for the very latest interviews. It's real news. And don't forget to order my new book called The Rockstar Chronicles, Series 1, Chronicles Truths, Confessions, and Wisdom from the Music Legends That Set Us Free. Order yours today on hardcover or ebook at bookbaby.com or amazon.com. It features over 45 intimate conversations with some of the greatest rock legends on the planet. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com, specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Tune in to Interviewing the Legends every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time on BBS Radio, Station 1.